It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. Paul's going to rant about Windows 8 creators complaining about Windows 11. Really? Really? We'll also talk about the new AMD desktop CPUs. Microsoft drops Kaizala. Kaiwata? And a very good game coming with the September Games with Gold, plus a couple of great app picks of the week. It's a good jam-packed Windows Weekly just around the corner.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 792, recorded Wednesday, August 31st, 2022. Arbiter of lies. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Give your team an engaging IT development platform to level up their skills. Volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/windows and make sure to mention WW30 to your IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. And by Infrascale. Infrascale delivers industry-leading data protection through backup and disaster recovery. Visit infrascale.com/twit to sign up for a free demo and see how Infrascale protects your business today. Hello, winners, and you dozers, too. It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is here, Thurrott.com. Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com. We have a quorum. It's time to gavel us to order.
We're voting you off the island.
You know, I feel bad about the people who don't have a hammer gavel. They have the little... have you ever seen that? The little thing gavel?
Yeah.
That's not... You want the hammer. You can't bring a hammer down with a little knob.
I wouldn't be so mad that thing snaps off the rod, you know?
Yeah, it goes flying. Maybe that's why they started doing that.
Yeah, they had to put up a net like in a baseball stadium so you don't get nailed by the gavel.
Whoa! Sorry, bailiff. Didn't mean to hit you in the
head. That's for the kids. That's
common sense. Order! Ladies and gentlemen, it is time to talk about Windows. This is going to be a challenge for Paul and Mary Jo because there is no build. There's no new build of Windows. How are you going to do a show with no new Windows build?
Well, fortunately, there was some new stupidity this week that I can't wait to talk
about. Oh, somebody said we should have a Thurrant every week.
Yeah.
Every week get a new Thurrant. And now,
get
ladies and gentlemen,
for one today.
Get the gong because it's time for a Thurrant.
There's a lot of backgrounder for this one, though. So earlier this year, I finished up that series, the Programming Windows series, which was the history of Windows.
Yeah.
And I talked to Mary Jo about this a lot, not just on the show, but privately. I don't mean this is going to sound offensive to people that went to war, but I feel like I have some version of PTSD from the Steven Sinofsky era. Like
you're not having nightmares.
I have dreamt about it. And Mary Jo experienced a lot of the same stuff that I did, so I think she can at least relate to it. It was definitely a form of trauma. I mean, I've had horrible things happen to me in my life, for sure. But from a professional perspective, this was easily the most awful thing that's ever happened.
What?
And,
really?
It was. Oh yeah. No. It was really hard to write about again.
Really?
You know.
I was reading his series as he was writing it about this era, and I just had to stop reading the article because I got so mad. Or I'd just be like, did that really happen? And I'd look it up. I'm like, yep, it sure did. And you just kind of block some of this out of your mind because it was so horrific.
The thing I left, I went into this era with a sense of dread because I just wrote this in an article. I don't know how other people deal personally with the bad things that have happened to them. My particular coping mechanism, which is probably not super healthy, is I try to forget it. I just pretend that it never happened, and I move on.
I did that too.
No wonder you've got trauma.
Yeah. So I realized as I went into this that I was doing this with this particular era.
You need to go somewhere where you can shatter pottery or something, right?
Sure. Yeah. So that's why I play Call of Duty.
Exactly. That's what you need to do.
The thing I didn't write in any of those articles, and the thing I will probably never deal with directly, is the personal stuff that happened between me and Steven Sinofsky in particular. who was an insane madman that would write me at 3 o'clock in the morning these 25,000 word emails. And then I would write back like one or two sentences because I couldn't deal with it. And then he would write another 25,000 word. And the thing I always used to think to myself was, there are people who actually work for him or work with him at Microsoft who have to respond to these emails, you know? And I don't know how anyone dealt with that. And the simple thing I will say is that Mary Jo and I both experienced some form of that era ending and people from Microsoft / Wagner and some calling us and saying, we're sorry. this will never happen. I mean that literally, like, we're sorry.
Wow.
We don't know what was happening exactly between you guys, but he's gone, and we want you to know that things are going to go back.
Ding
to normal.
Dong, the witch is dead. Which articles should we go through to really get that PTSD?
You won't. That's my point. Is I wrote that stuff without going through
it.
Any of that.
You didn't post.
No,
it.
I can't. It's too personal.
Oh,
it's
that's hysterical.
It's not.
I'm looking at your Windows 8.1 stories, but it won't be there.
Right.
No, but you did write about the Windows 8. No, you did write about the Windows 8 history.
Oh, of course I did. But what I mean is I didn't write about the personal stuff. In other words, what I went through with this person is not part of the history of Windows. Well, it's part of my history.
What did he do that was so awful?
He was... I just said I didn't want to talk about it, Leo. He was bipolar, for one thing. And I had instances where I was his, like, pet chimp. Like, I was the happiest... I was the person he wanted to be with and talk to more than anything. He would be like a little child jumping up and down. And then I would just be honest about the products he was writing, and he would set out to assassinate me personally and professionally.
Wow.
And it's like I said, it's a little hard. I don't want to get into it too far, but the point is there are people associated with him who still revere him to this day. There is an element that we see today in politics and just in our world of misinformation and people just overtly lying and presenting it as facts and not caring about the truth.
Gaslighting, we call that.
Those people innovated. Like they almost created it out of whole cloth. And
should we just from now on say Stephen Sinofsky is the person who shall not be named and just...
That's what I say.
Yeah, let's say that.
She does it.
From now on, yeah, no
but,
more.
But I just say this as background because... there are a group of people. I remember Julie Larson-Green was his chief top lieutenant or whatever.
She took over for a while.
For partially and only briefly. But I almost saw that as a punishment, like you're going to fix this mess you made. You know, she was the most unqualified person imaginable. But we were behind her, Mary Jo and I, briefly before Mary Jo took off during the Surface Pro 4 event. And
why did you take off Mary Jo?
Because she's the wife of the
door. Wow.
I almost got tackled in the hall as I was running.
And I said to her, I asked her if I could take a photo. And she said, okay, but as long as you're not mean to me. And I thought to myself, mean to you? Like, you arbiter of lies. you are you kidding to me? Like, you think I'm mean to you? Like, that was crazy to me.
Wow.
But another person that was part, so you have SS and then Julie Larson Green, and the next person down was Jensen Harris. And him and I actually have a long history, and he's a good guy. But the couple of points I'll just make about him was before whatever the PDC was, where the office team, which is where they were from at the time, announced the ribbon interface, remember? So it was probably PDC 2005 or 7, whatever year it was. Mm. He emailed me and said, hey, I'd like to show you something before the show. And I met with him at the Los Angeles Convention Center ahead of the PDC, and he opened a laptop. He showed me the ribbon, and he explained all the stuff and why they did it and what they were doing and everything. I thought was really interesting, and I'd never heard of this guy. And I said, this is great, but I said, why did you want to show this to me? And he says, well, I have a story to tell you. You actually got me my job at Microsoft. Like, what are you talking about? And when Outlook 97, the first version of Outlook came out, it didn't handle internet email. It was just MAPI, like Microsoft email. So he wrote an extension for it, or some kind of add-in that would let it work normally with internet email. And I wrote a little tiny thing, just a paragraph about it. And I said, you should get this. It turns Outlook into a usable email program. The guy who ran Outlook at Microsoft read it, talked to some underling and said, hire this guy. And they did. And he got a job in Office, and on he went. So Windows 8 was my fault.
He was the chief designer at Office, right? And then became the chief designer at Windows, right?
You know what? I don't know exactly what his title was, okay. But I'll tell you something. This guy has no background in design at all.
Oh, interesting.
He went to school for music.
Oh,
he was interesting. He was a good guy, but yeah, you're right. Like, so these people who are really not qualified to be doing what they were doing it. And this was, I think Stephen Sinofsky surrounded himself with people who were not threatening to him, frankly. I think that was a lot of it. And Jensen, like, probably like Julie Larson Green, was a really nice person. He was a really nice guy. Mm-hmm. But I knew something was wrong. It was I recorded an extensive interview with him for Windows 8 when they revealed the UI, whatever that was. I think it was mid-year, a year and a half before it came out, or whatever it was, or a year before it came out. And it was confusing, to say the least. So we talked for an hour, and I recorded the whole thing. I don't believe I ever published this interview because I was so freaked out by what he was saying. And the one key phrase I will never forget, and I've told this story before, but I said, it was just like the story we talked about last week where I said, went to the Windows Phone guys and I said, hey, I need to know the names of these things so I can call them something. And it's like, oh, we don't know what the names are. No, I'm like, you do know what the names are. It's in the code. Like, it's you created a UI. That UI has a name. It's in there. You know, you got to be able to tell me what it is. And so I had the same question with Jensen about the charms. And I said, so the charms are a fly out, a panel, a toolbar. And he said, no, Paul, they're just charms. I said, no, Jensen, they're not. They're a widget, an interface. And he said, no, they're just charms. And the start menu or start screen is just Windows. And I'm like, no, that's not true. And it was the moment, it was like the King Has No Clothes moment for me, like there was no thinking behind this at all. Like,
this is why I don't like big corporations, because they're a little bit of an echo chamber. So what he was saying was, internally, we think of this as this.
What we do.
As an outsider, would like to liken it to something else, but no. And
let me tell you, listen,
the group think that
I didn't go to school for this, okay? But as a communicator of a sort, I can tell you that one of the key ways you can explain something to someone is to compare it to something they already understand.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
right. But not in a corporate environment. In a corporate environment, it's groupthink, so I understand what he was trying to do.
I think
what he was doing was parroting a company line, which was really just a Windows division line.
Yeah. But
which was an us against them divisional
groupthink.
Problem.
That's corporate. That's exactly. Yeah. That's why I hate big corporations. I hate them.
Yeah, and I walked away from that like, oh my God, what has happened to this guy? I really care about. This is nonsense. They don't know what they're talking. They don't know what they're doing.
This happens all the time at big companies where somebody, usually a leader or boss, says something that's patently wrong.
Yep.
But it gets adopted as part of the company song.
Yep.
And everybody drinks the Kool-Aid. And but the rest of us in the outside world are saying, well, you're nuts. That's not the way it is. And they say, no, it is because.
Well, to recap, Windows 8 came out. Windows 8 got rid of the start button. It got rid of the start menu.
Oh.
It had a full screen start experience, as they called it, that only made sense on tablets, which no one owned or used. Everyone had traditional form factor computers. They, for the first time, offered no way to go back to the old interface. Every major UI innovation from the Windows 95 desktop to the XP start menu to whatever else you want to talk about, those versions of Windows offered a way to go back to the old thing because people were used to the old thing and some people weren't going to be able to move forward so quickly. Windows 8, which had the most radical design change, offered no way. It was our way or the highway. There was no plan B. There was no nothing. It was a disaster.
How aware do you think they are when this kind of thing goes on? I mean, it happens at Apple. It's going to happen tomorrow, a week from today at Apple, where they're going to say things like, we invented astrophotography. Or, and they're going to say that, or we invented the periscope camera. Mm-hmm. And right, so everybody in the outside world knows it's not true. Do you think they are aware?
Yeah. Here's a timely comparison, and this will help you understand it because it's something you'll understand. No, it's I watched a documentary last night about John McAfee on Netflix. It is horrible.
I can't wait to watch that.
Horrible. Yeah. It's one of the worst things I've ever watched.
It's not worth watching, or it's just because it's horrible because it's true.
It's
horrible because it's true as well. So here's poorly made.
This is okay.
This guy spent the last years of his life on the lam, And yeah. and the point of it is he invented this world in which the narcos from Mexico, the U.S. government, whoever was all after him. He had supposedly bugged every computer on Earth, had you know done all these things. He'd done none of it. None of it was happening. And throughout this documentary, he's like, we got to go. Our lives are in danger. The bad guys are after us. None of it was true. None of it was true. But there was this moment.
Well, that's what happens when you are smoking a lot of that thing he was making.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right. But there's a moment at the end of the documentary where one of the filmmakers had gone back years later and was with him again. And in a moment of drunken, drugged up, whatever nonsense, he admitted he had made everything up.
Oh, wow.
That he was creating his own reality. And wasn't it more interesting than...
No,
real life or something like that.
It isn't, no.
And I feel like Windows 8 was like that. Like, the guys who...
We're going to see an Elon Musk documentary in years
yes,
to come.
Yes, the same thing.
Similar.
Yeah. It'll be the same thing.
Yes.
Yep. The guys who believed in SS and what he was doing may have believed that what they were doing is right. They may have. I don't understand following this whatever, but they did. The people outside of that group did not. There were teams at Microsoft who over time all agreed separately, we're not working with you. Like, what you're doing is insane. We're not doing it. We're not going to make a version of Office that runs under Metro or whatever. We're not, you know, like over time, the whole company came to this. By the time Windows 8 was going to be released, Microsoft as a company already understood this was going to be a disaster and that they needed to take steps immediately to correct this as quickly as possible. They got rid of him before the thing was launched. And they talked to me. Remember, Stephen Ballmer came out at the launch or at whatever the event, the PDC yeah. that year, and he said, we're all rapid release now. We've been building toward this moment. We're going to iterate. And the point, but they had to because Windows 8 was so awful. So yeah. awful. All right. Yeah. So this is a long story. I'm already 30 minutes into this. But the point of this is all background because I've been sitting here. I wrote my piece about Windows 7 and Windows 8 and my history thing. And I'm like, I'm going to put this behind me. And I got on Twitter yesterday, and God damn it, Jensen Harris has come out of a hole in some woods somewhere, and he is criticizing the Windows 11 start menu.
Oh!
And I got to tell you...
We got rid of that many years ago.
The things he writes about how the Windows 11 start menu are wrong are multiple times worse what they did to start in Windows 8. Like That's it funny. Is, there is such a lack of self-awareness here that it, yeah. by the way, he's kind of right. It is amusing to me that he confused search highlights with the start menu because he didn't know what start was when he was making it. But you know, now he still doesn't know what it is. Like that's hilarious. But you know, it's like we've all heard the term like pot, kettle, black, right? This may sound a little dramatic. This is like a drunk driver pointing to someone not using their blinkers and saying, that guy's being bad. You know, like, no, you destroyed Windows. You destroyed it. And now you're complaining about a version of Windows that, yes,
has He's not wrong about this searching for Chrome
He's not
problem.
Wrong about what he's saying.
Well, hold on a second. Actually, he is wrong.
Oh.
So go back up to what he writes about this.
Okay.
What did he think was going to happen here? Like,
I know.
Does he know? I
no,
mean,
what
seriously.
What he's trying to criticize, though, isn't wrong. He's not the guy who can throw any
No,
stones.
He has no moral authority here at all. But the thing he saw, so first of all, the start menu is Microsoft's flagship user experience. Yeah, it is. You destroyed it.
Yeah.
It should represent the very best UI design the company is capable of. Yeah, it should. You put a Fisher-Price front end onto Microsoft's flagship client operating system. And you're complaining about Windows 11. The Windows 11 start menu looks great.
Yeah, but
that
but
could not be said of the Windows 8.
He's not wrong about what happens when you search
well,
for Chrome in it.
Except for one thing. What's he searching for? Does he seriously think that the way to find Chrome is to use the Windows 11 start menu?
Well,
that's how
no,
you
it would be
that's
if
how
I had
you find Chrome.
If I had Chrome, I guess
if you had
not.
Chrome installed,
yeah.
Guess what happens when you type in Chrome when it's installed?
Oh, okay.
It comes up under Best Match, and it just works.
Right.
I got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It literally says Best Match, Google Chrome.
Right.
So it shouldn't be a web search in the start menu, is what you're saying.
Now, look, his complaints about ads and UIs and blah blah blah. Yeah, okay, fine. Windows 8, first version of Windows that had ads. You did that. You did that. Your stupid new mobile platform brought ads to Windows for the first time ever. In 2000, 2012, whatever year that came out, 2011, maybe before it came out, I said ads were a slippery slope and they cheapened Windows. And the point was it was only going to get worse over time. And so, yeah, here we are in Windows 11. It's worse. Congratulations.
He says, congratulations, Microsoft. They're fixing it thanks to me.
I'm going to kill this person. Please tell me it doesn't say that.
He says, less than 24 hours later, pretty impressive speed, Microsoft. Great start.
He is. Please take that off the screen before I lose control. He is the last person on Earth to be discussing this topic.
Microsoft has already gotten to work fixing some of these things. The Bing wallpaper ad is gone, and a few of the corners have been fixed up a bit. It's cool
Don't worry. The Bing ad will be back.
How fast they can update content server side.
So first of all, the search highlights experience, which is not the start menu, which is what he's describing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is web-based. It's easily to fix.
Yep.
One of my best tips about Windows 11 and Windows 10, by the way, is how you get rid of that thing because it's terrible. Mm-hmm. You'll recall, I described this as a distraction. When I did this, I had to turn it on to take a screenshot of it. I turn this off on all my computers. But, you know, you go to search for something, not typically on the web, by the way, because you're using Bing and no one normal does that. But you're trying to find something on your computer. You're trying to run an app. You don't run very often, whatever the reason you might do that. If you type Windows key plus S or Q, search highlights comes up. I don't know what this is. It's a distraction. Today, they're talking about Kuala Lumpur. You know, great. That has nothing to do with what I was doing. Right. And I'm just distracted on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
I may literally forget what I was doing when I see something like this. I don't understand why this UI exists. Well, I know exactly why it exists. But no one can point to it and say, well, here's why it makes sense for users. Here's how it makes your life better or makes you more productive or keeps you in the flow. This is literally the opposite of keeping you in the flow. This is a distraction that makes you forget why you were here in the first
place. Part of this is Bing. I mean, look, I clicked the button that said, let's go to the Chrome download page.
Of course.
And then they've got people, before I get to the Chrome download link, people also ask, why won't Windows 10 let me download Chrome? Why is it taking 20 hours to download Chrome? Why should you install Chrome on your laptop? How to install Chrome on my computer? But then I have a whole, and Google doesn't do this, trending on Bing page.
More distractions, right.
Harley Quinn season 4.
Seriously.
Bezos notes ignored. Well, you know, that's kind of interesting. I want to read these instead of do what I was going to do, which was download Chrome.
And if you listen, I don't know, it's different for different people, but if I spent 10, 15 seconds on that, I would completely forget why I was there in the first place. Anyway, look.
So I download Chrome and now it says Microsoft Edge runs in the same technology as Chrome. Yeah.
Now someone's going to say to you, Leo, Google does the same thing.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
They're just as bad. Yeah. No, Stalin and Hitler were both terrible. I get it. It doesn't make one of them okay because the other one was doing it.
I just want to point out, he just compared Microsoft and Google to Stalin and Hitler.
Listen, I think historically I can make a case for this. but whatever. No, it's like the point. Look, we'll talk about communication. Sometimes you exaggerate to make a point. Listen, something else being terrible doesn't make the thing you're complaining about okay.
Yeah.
It's still terrible, right? Like, but Google does it too. Yeah, great. They're both awful companies.
Awful. Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
One of these companies could take the high ground, and neither one of them is doing it. So, great.
Now you got me installing Chrome
before I'm done. Before I'm done ranting, I also want to address the feedback I always get when I say write anything about Windows 8, whether it's this topic or the article series I did. I hear this every single time. It makes me insane. They'll say, well, yeah, but I still think the Windows 8 UI was the best one ever on a tablet. Like that somehow what we did in Windows 10 is terrible, and now what we're doing in Windows 11 is terrible. And you know what? Nobody cares, dude. Nobody cares. Because Windows 8 did not institute a great era of tablet computing that we're still enjoying today. The fact that there's some tiny minority of people prefer or need a tablet is interesting. The fact that Windows 10 or Windows 11 might be less ideal for those computers is interesting. But the fact remains that 90-something percent, it's probably a high 90-something percent of people that use Windows today, as in 2012, do so on a traditional form factor computer without touch, without a pen. They don't care about swiping in from the sides. They're not touching stuff. They just, it's a computer. They get work done. So if this is like what's still in your head, your head's in the wrong place, because that's not what's important. It was never what's important. It is the central problem with Windows 8 that they focus so strongly on something that nobody used that they made the experience worse for virtually everybody.
Yeah, I'll grant you that. By the way, you were right. Ridiculous. I searched for Chrome after installing it, and it's, right. and the right answer Best shows match. Up.
Exactly. Yeah. What a great UI. Yeah, smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, it's smart. It's even smarter than you're making it look, because if you just type CH, probably Chrome would already be selected. Yeah. You'd hit enter.
I always mistype stuff, so I typed crine at first, C-H-R-I-N-E, and it found it. So, yeah, it's actually...
That doesn't mean start search is perfect.
No, but it's better than I would have thought.
The thing he doesn't explain what he's doing. It's like, oh, look at all this. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Nobody uses the start menu to search the internet.
Right.
What are you talking about?
No, that's
about?
Right. That's a good point. I didn't
That's crazy.
I didn't even think of that when
and
I
by the
saw
way,
the
if
tweet.
You do that, you deserve that UI. That's terrible.
Doesn't Microsoft say it's kind of a universal search, though? I mean, isn't that part of the...
It is part of it. Yeah, for sure.
So but they're encouraging that.
Of course they are, because they want you to hit Bing.
Right.
And that makes Bing more popular. And, we get to show you ads. Oh, and look, we have MSN things. This is all part of this game they're playing in Windows, driving you to their own products and services.
When that's I want Chrome, I always just go to Facebook and search there.
I think exactly. Thank you. That's actually, that's a great example. Exactly. Actually, I put on my VR headset and I do it that way.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I use my eyes to type.
I say, where is it? Where is it? Actually, I feel bad because our editors have been using Windows 8.1 for years since it came out on their
8.1
Dell.
8.1 was a little less horrible.
Yeah, it was horrible. 8.1 was an improvement on their Dell Precision workstations. We have new ones we just bought, and sometime in the next
Windows 11.
Few weeks, Windows 11 on brand new Dell workstations.
So I thought I had PTSD. Those guys are still using Windows 8.1.
Windows 8.1.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. When they search for Chrome, they get nothing.
Yep.
Right.
All right. Well, your point is well taken. I think your point is well taken.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I mean, I'm not as upset as you are about it, but I get it. I get it.
No, you know what made me upset? I was like, I laughed about it when I first saw that he was saying this. I'm like, oh, brother. Jensen Harris criticizing Windows 11, right? Oh, brother. But then people started chiming in and going, yeah, Jensen's right. Windows 8 was better, blah, blah, blah. I'm like,
who
are you people? Like, where did you come from?
History rewriters come flying out of the woodwork, you know? Like, no.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Never forget what they did to Windows and that they ruined it. Like, never forget this. It is so important that we not forget that.
How long was 8 the dominant, the
Well, 3 years, right? So
but before 8.1 came out?
To make.
Oh, Windows 8 was for 1 year. So 8.1 came out in a year, and it was free. Yeah. The next year, Windows 8.1.1 came out. The thing people kind of forget is by the time Windows 8 wound down, before Windows 10 came out, we had a start menu was back. You could replace the full screen experience entirely. They had floating windows. Remember, one of the biggest things they had was was all these things were all full screen. The initial version of Snap was ludicrously limited, where like a one app had to work on a side panel that was a fixed width, and they added arbitrary width. They finally figured that out. And then, you know, Windows 10 just kind of cleaned it up. So Windows 10 in many ways is like, you know, Windows 8.2 or 8.3 or whatever you want to call it. But they wanted to get rid of the brand. I mean, Windows 8 was so tarnished as a brand that they skipped a number. That's how bad it was. They didn't even want you to think this was the next one of 8.
We're
going double digits with this one. Yeah. It's way different.
No. Yeah. I started reading more about Windows 8 after I saw this. I'm like, was it really as horrible as I thought? And I went back and started looking at my articles on it. And the thing that was the most horrible was they knew this was going to be a train wreck.
That's right.
Like they
knew. Oh my God.
Because they had testers, especially in businesses, telling them, you guys aren't really going to do this, right? Like, you're not going to make a non-desktop-centric OS that isn't built for keyboards, right? Like, you're not going to really roll this out as, like, your new flagship, right? And I kept thinking, I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're going to go right up to the edge, and then they're going to be like, no, somebody is going to say to them, you can't do this. Like, our customer base is businesses. And they did it. And I'm like, okay, they ignored every single piece of feedback that they got that, you know, like Leo said, inside the bubble, inside the corporation, they were like, this is going to be amazing. This is going to be great.
So, all right, since you're going down this path, I will also add another story I tell all the time about Windows 8 is people complain during testing. Like, there are UIs that are non-discoverable. For example, the charms were non-discoverable. Right. So you could do something. You might hit a keyboard command. You might move the mouse might kick over and hit the edge of the screen, and this UI would appear. And then you'd move the mouse and it would disappear. And then you wouldn't, because you didn't do it on purpose, you had no idea how you triggered it. And you were like, what was that thing I just saw? What was that? And so people would say, hey, you need to have some test or some training in the product to explain to people, hey, before we get going, let me show you. Like when you run Android for the first time, it says, hey, we're using gestures now. Let's step through. We're going to make sure you know how they work before we dump you in the system. It's just common sense. So they relented at one point and said, all right, we'll put something in the product during testing and we'll see how it goes. Universally, yep, perfect. This is exactly what we were talking about. You need to have training in here. You have it. Now people will understand how it works. And Stanovsky was like, yeah, we're not doing it. I don't care.
Yep.
Because
no, he said, people will figure it out. People will figure it out. And they won't.
this is his longest lasting impact on Microsoft remains to this day. And it's about feedback. It is paying lip service to feedback, pretending all you care about is feedback. You don't care about feedback at all.
Exactly.
You don't. Right. You just pretend that you do. And they did that with Windows 8. They've been doing it ever since. And, Windows 11 is the ultimate example of that, because this is a product that shipped 3 months after they showed it to anybody. Got a bunch of feedback. A bunch of people said, well, listen, this start menu, like Jensen points out, he doesn't point out any of the actual problems with the start menu, by the way, because there are many, but he doesn't mention one of them. There's a lot of problems here. It doesn't do a bunch of stuff we're used to. Yeah, whatever. Don't care. And then a year went by, and now we're getting the second version of Windows 11. They added folders, and they added a layout feature that just a little bit changes the dial on what you see more of. And that's all they did. They did not address the complaints. In fact, they come out public. Well, no, that was with the taskbar. They came out and said, yeah, we're not fixing those problems. Like, we hear you. Yeah. We know that some people like to put it on top or on the sides. We're not doing that. Like, they just, that's Windows today. So, yeah, there are complaints we could make for Windows 11. Absolutely. He didn't hit on any of the important parts at all. Which,
you know what? My bet, I think he's a Mac user. I'm not even saying that sarcastically. Like, he's a design guy, right?
He's probably
a Mac user.
He's probably an
iPad Pro user, because he was such a big fan of touch and pen and everything, or whatever.
Right.
I don't know.
Huh.
Anyway,
I guess this is his first time using Windows 11 this week. He hadn't tried it.
Yeah, exactly.
What are they doing? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Can I do an ad, or would you like to rant some more?
You know, Leo, I'm glad you asked.
He needs a breather.
I won't say, but I still prefer the Windows 8 tablet experience. I won't say that.
I will spiral in silence. Oh, good.
That sounds like a...
an Amber Alert.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or a hurricane's heading your way.
No, Jensen Harris, here he comes.
Yeah, here comes Jensen Harris.
He's at the
Harris.
Door.
Okay, well, I'll let Paul...
Hurricane Harris is coming.
I'll let Paul handle his alerts, and I will tell you about our friends at IT Pro TV, who I personally know and love. IT Pro TV, Tim Broom and Don Pezet, I consider good friends. They came to us when they first started. They said, we're modeling IT Pro TV on Twit. We'd like to advertise. I said, well, all right, let me see what you're doing. Don and Tim were... IT trainers when they, you know, in traditional classroom IT trainers, they saw what we were doing here and they said, this is a better way to do it. This is a way to do IT training that's engaging, that's fun, that's available everywhere because it's on your TV, on your computer, on your tablet, on your phone, your Apple TV, your Roku, everywhere. So they said, so we'll make these videos. We'll get great people who are experts in the field but are so passionate about IT that it's fun to watch them. You are going to learn. We talk a lot about IT Pro TV for anybody who wants to get into IT. It's a great place to get that cert. They have every cert under the sun to get started in IT. We don't talk a lot about the business side of this. And, you know, if you have a company and you have an IT department, I think it's important to keep them trained, to get them upskilled, to get them recertified. And this is something that you can give them as a benefit that they will really appreciate. It's a great way to improve your retention, too, of IT professionals, because they're going to say, boy, I like this. I want to keep taking more classes. We know people love IT Pro TV. 80% of users who start the video actually finish it. That is unheard of. That is a number beyond YouTube, beyond TikTok, beyond anything else. IT Pro TV is engaging. Your team will enjoy learning on their platform, but they will learn. And that's the key. And, you know, the industry is changing so rapidly, they need to learn. Your IT team needs to keep trained, needs to continue to learn, because there's new software, there's new systems, there's new cyber threats, all of which they can learn about at IT Pro TV so they can make your business sing. IT Pro TV will give you any of the certs your team needs, or if they want to get recertified, all in one place. Every vendor, every skill, Microsoft, of course, Cisco, yes, Linux, Apple, security, cloud. They even have compliance training. They have soft skills training like business and marketing. So your whole company can learn at IT Pro TV. There are seven studios in their beautiful Gainesville studio. We went out and visited them when they opened it. I was so impressed. They're running Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., constantly creating new stuff because it's always changing. So that means everything in their library, 5,800 hours of downloadable content, is up to date. It goes from the studio to the library in less than a day. I think they were inspired by us, too, with that, you know. You could do so much with an IT Pro TV business plan. Their dashboard means it's easy to track your team's results. You can manage seats. You can assign and unassign team members. You can access monthly usage reports, make sure they're using it. You'll see metrics like logins, viewing time, tracks completed, and more. You can, manage your teams. You can create subsets. You can even assign individual episodes. They're all about 20 to 30 minutes. You can say, can you master this? And they'll want to, and they will, and they can. You'll get immediate insight into your team's viewing patterns and progress over any period of time. You'll get great visual reports. That's nice for you for absorbing the information, but also to show the boss, to show the board or the C-level. So they know that you're definitely getting your ROI. So for individuals, yes, but also for businesses to get that IT development you need to level up your skills while enjoying the journey. For teams as small as 2, as large as 1,000. Volume discounts start at 5 seats, but we got a discount right out the box. Go to itpro.tv/windows. As an individual or as an enterprise, you can use this code WW30. If you're a business, tell your account executive, whisper in his ear or her ear, WW30, 30% off or more on a business plan. That holds for individuals too, by the way. itpro.tv/windows, offer code WW30. Please use that because then they know you saw it on Windows Weekly, and that helps us. itpro.tv/windows, offer code WW30. Okay, we've given Paul time.
He's calmed down.
You know, for all of the talk about rants and whatnot, I think Mary Jo's rant about conversation view?
Focused inbox.
That was pretty good, too.
I think
I blame myself because we got new album art that shows you two tugging at at war. And it's got a big red background. And it's like waving a red flag in front of a bull. It's our fault. My fault. I set it off. And I apologize.
Okay. Thank you for bringing up Focus Inbox right now because I don't want to rant.
No, not a rant. Okay.
Well, it's maybe a rant. I don't know. I am curious. Are other people getting a ton more Outlook spam than normal?
Oh, like Outlook.com
and regular Outlook.
But spam from other people, not Microsoft.
from everyone, like every possible source of spam.
So in other words, their spam filters are not working as well as they used to.
Not working. Yeah. And at first, when I put my little tinfoil hat on after a beer or three, I was like, you know what? They heard me ranting about Focused Inbox. So you know what they're doing? They found my email account and they're just going to flood it with spam to prove that I should be using Focused Inbox. But then I started seeing other people who don't have Focused Inbox enabled saying they're getting more spam than usual.
So you've done a little bit more legwork than Jensen Harris did because you didn't quite fall for the this happened, therefore this happened. He assumed that because he, with all of his influence, went onto Twitter and complained about something, Microsoft fixed it. When in fact, I bet they didn't even know he did that. So
probably not.
You know, and or they, you know, they switched that thing up on some normal regular basis. I love the notion that you... That, like, you just assume you did this, you know? This is so egotistical.
This, I had this happen with
I'm
Gmail.
Blaming beer for that.
But. I had this happen
not
Gmail.
You. I'm sorry. I didn't mean you. You actually, you thought that and then saw other people and you said, "Why? Oh, that's not correct. He thought that and stopped thinking, was my I didn't mean you. I meant him. Sorry.
I had this happen in Gmail where all of a sudden it just didn't. I used to get all my mail go through Gmail as just kind of, first stage sewage treatment plant. It would just get all the worst stuff out and then I would do other stuff later. And I stopped. I stopped going through Gmail because it just didn't do a very good job. So maybe there's something over time the spammers figure it out.
Maybe. I don't. I have had, like, the past few years, great success with Outlook spam filters. I'm not saying they never come through, but, like, very rare. Now, I'm not kidding you. Like, 15, 20 pieces of spam a day in all my Outlook.
No, something clearly changed. I honestly, for something like this, I would almost always blame, like, human error. And, I don't mean you. I mean, someone on the back end probably flicked a switch somewhere and some tenant of Outlook.com or whatever it is, on the web, whatever. Just spam got less effective, you know, or spam filtering. I bet. It's something like that. And they'll quietly fix it, you know.
I hope. It's been a couple weeks now, and I'm like, somebody hopefully
here's okay. This is another example of this. So last week, my internet connection from Thursday through Sunday was terrible. I couldn't play video games effectively. I couldn't watch YouTube videos in 1080p. Like, they would always auto go down to the lowest, like 360p or 480p. Something was wrong. And I was gearing up. I'm going to have to contact what are they called now? RSAN is now called Astound or something because they are astounding. And Monday, I didn't call. Monday, it seemed fine. And then Tuesday, I got a thing in the mail from Astound that said, hey, you can upgrade your internet connection. I literally got a promotion for faster internet on the heels of them slowing my internet.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, I think this is a very human condition. You naturally assume they did that to me on purpose. But actually, I think they're just incompetent. And, you know, that's perfect. It's a perfect internet access behavior, you know?
Yeah.
Perfect. Anyway, I don't know.
Well, I was trying to get some popcorn so that I could enjoy the rants, but all I could find is Planters cheese balls. So if you guys...
Oh, boy.
If you just want to continue, I'm just going to sit here and...
Eat some cheese balls?
Have some...
Crunchy. Yeah.
God's perfect food.
Really? I think you could do balls? Better. Or she.
You could get cheesies from Canada, but...
Utz makes a very nice cheese ball as well.
I like that you're a connoisseur of this type of food.
A review of cheese balls.
There's a long story behind it. I don't want to go into it. I am excited. I don't know if I should be.
Yeah.
Because there's two things happening that are making gaming PCs more approachable, more affordable. For one, NVIDIA has a overstock of cards. Right. And I know the 4000 is coming out sometime in the next few weeks. But if you're looking for a 3080 or 3070, the prices have tumbled. You can get
them. Already make this. You can get like a previously used by a cryptocurrency guy. It's like buying a 78 Camaro that was beaten into the ground by a teenager. Like,
Or a police.
Get a
police cruiser. You really want a Chevy Caprice.
Or a former rental car.
Yeah, there you go.
No, that was taken care of.
No. But you can get them. You can can get them new, I think, pretty good price.
Yeah.
And now AMD has announced, and I use a Ryzen for my gaming machine, and it's with a 3070. It's fantastic. They've announced their new 7000 series.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question about this, because I'm not a hardware guy. And I had this discussion with Brad, and I feel like this is the lack of information here that both of us have. So Intel infamously is adopting like a hybrid core architecture that is clearly influenced by ARM, right?
So yeah, by
performance
Apple.
Cores.
Okay,
fair enough. The performance cores and efficiency cores. Okay. But before this, the way that Intel did things was they just had cores, right? And they were probably the equivalent of performance cores, but they were it was kind of like the big block approach to performance, right? And so a couple of years ago, I guess four years ago, they switched from like 2-core to 4-core in their mainstream chips, and it was kind of a neat thing to do. They didn't really harm battery life, but they improved performance. But AMD has always kind of been over in the corner doing their own thing, and their Ryzen chipsets, recent generations, have been multi-core, but they don't talk about performance and efficiency cores, right? So these this new desktop chipset, I think it goes up to up to 16 cores, right? 32 threads. Very high, speeds. But what's your take on this? Like, is this like the way this part of the world, the microprocessor world, has evolved? Like, we've gone from like one big, like a muscle car approach to like this way more efficient multi-core, multi-processing thing. I don't know. Like, what do you?
Well, it's great for laptops. I mean, there's no question about that, and that's why it came from ARM originally, because it was for phones. Where battery life was really critical, and it's been great on laptops. Actually, AMD has not traditionally been the greatest laptop processor out there. So I don't. And they are doing performance and efficiency cores on these.
Oh, they are now.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're also 5-nanometer chips, which is something Intel can't really.
What's their smallest chips that they actually make? Is it 11?
I think there's still 11. I think there's still 10 or 11. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So AMD, which has done a really good job of making power chips for gaming, is claiming even more, like 30% increase in performance.
Jay Miner, who is the architect behind the Atari 400, 800, and the Amigas, is probably smiling somewhere in heaven.
Yes.
Is because he, in some ways, he didn't invent it. I don't mean like that. But he created the first mass market computers that used what we think of as sort of multiprocessing, separate chipsets to handle graphics and other operation, music and so forth. And I feel like this is the natural extension of that work, like that. We have these things that are very efficient, but also very powerful, multi-core in this case, like system on a chip that have little discrete parts, for graphics and general processing and so forth. It's interesting. Like, it's, 35, 40 years later?
We're living the PC world at this point.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. They're now up to 5.7 gigahertz peak frequency.
Yeah, which is incredible.
They do require DDR5, which is more expensive.
Which is really fast.
And there's one other drawback, which bugs me a little bit. Thunderbolt.
So as long as they support USB 4, this is something I've been meaning to test. So I just got a Ryzen-based ThinkPad in, and it is USB 4. But I suspect I can't plug this into a Thunderbolt dock.
Oh, I'd be really curious, yeah.
I am really curious. Yeah, I haven't done it yet. I'm going to do that soon.
Because that's an Intel technology, so the Intel PCs have it. And it can sometimes be an add-on on an AMD desktop.
Yeah,
but it's not native.
So, even if it doesn't support Thunderbolt, like a dock, I mean, it should still be 40 gigabit speeds.
Yeah.
So you would have to
I like USB 4,
yeah.
And it's supposedly, it's compatible with Thunderbolt 3, but I don't know if that means every USB 4 port will have it. So that's why I'm really curious what you
The laptop I have, there are two that have it and one that does not. One is USB 3.2 Gen something. I don't remember the exact specifications.
Anyway, it's a good time to be building a PC. That's I guess, the...
Yeah, all of a sudden, after it was the worst time in history to build a PC, like about a year ago.
Right.
You know? Yep.
And you know, it's funny. There's, you go on Reddit, there's people who call themselves Team Red, which you are now in, by the way. Well, because AMD is red.
Our logo.
Yeah, now you're, yeah, I didn't mean to do that.
Red. No, it's okay. I like AMD.
Okay, good. You're now Team Red.
Yeah. I mean, I like Intel too, but AMD has certainly had their issues over the years, but I feel like they've been kind of hitting it out of the park lately. And it's interesting to me that Intel continues to stumble. The other issue, by the way, I don't want to get too far down this rabbit hole, but I have this between the spring and the summer had in for review at least a dozen laptops that are 12th gen and then the one Ryzen. Every single one of them has had a performance problem of some kind. And it's the type of thing that kind of evens out over time, but in the beginning, it's really bad. And I've been stressed over the fact that I never see anyone reviewing laptops mentioning this. But I've seen it again and again and again. And I'm not insane, but I guess you could make a case. But I definitely see what I'm seeing. And I finally saw a reviewer mention that there's something about the 12th gen where they've gone to this hybrid core system where the delta between like the balanced power mode and the high performance mode is much greater than it was with the older generation chipsets. And that might have something to do with what I'm seeing because they all come in balanced and it might be a little too balanced or too, like or not balanced enough maybe. Or maybe Windows just needs to be updated to support these hybrid chipsets better. Maybe it's just an inefficiency thing. Although you have to think they knew this was coming.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I used to root for AMD because I thought Intel needed the competition. Now I'm rooting for Intel again because AMD's eating their lunch. Yeah, it's kind of...
It's
We actually now...
It's a little embarrassing.
Where we really were in a Wintel world, what, 10 years ago, we really now have Apple Silicon, other ARM versions from Qualcomm. We have AMD... And Intel, we really have some strong contenders out there. That's, I think, very good for competition, for innovation and all of that.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's also what Microsoft had been looking for many, many years.
Yeah, that's what they want,
and,
sure.
They were begging Intel in particular, but chipset makers in general, to make more efficient chipsets. You know, Intel found it very easy to amp up the performance. And it's like, that's great, but most computers are mobile now. What we need is battery life, you know? Yep. And that's going to help. Whoever comes out on top or if this is a three,
Apple's
whatever.
Apple's amazing in the battery life right now. I mean, they just own it. I'd love to see a PC with, you know, 12, 13, 15 hours. Are there any?
Nine would be good.
There are.
No.
Notepad is notoriously power hungry.
You know what? We've talked about this every time, and Paul is always like, what are you doing to your battery that you can't get more than 8 hours? And I send him my battery report, and he's like, okay, I don't know what you're doing, but you're right. You're getting 8 hours of battery. Are you getting seven or six?
I'm not going to name names here, but I got a complaint from a PC maker because I reported that their battery life was terrible. And I said, well, this is not what we're seeing in our labs. And I said, I'm not using it in your lab. I'm using it in the real world. And this is what I'm seeing. I was surprised by how bad it was as well.
Part of this is Microsoft really taking advantage of these efficiency cores, right?
This is what I'm wondering. See, I don't know how much... I remember them ever discussing this explicitly, but they must... be doing it.
To be smart about it. They have to say, we're going to put this on the efficiency core.
This is kind of why I asked about the AMD thing, because AMD had gone multi-core a long time ago. They've been doing, you know, by multi-core, I mean more than four cores on mainstream chipsets. Intel now, I don't know the exact numbers, but depending on what you're looking at, core i3 through core i9, obviously they have 2 to 4 probably performance cores and 4 to 8 or more efficiency cores. I mean, this changes things. I mean, Windows has to be tailored for this for it to make sense. It has to be, right? Like, I wonder if I also wonder if future enhancements to Windows that take better advantage of this architecture will be, of course they will be. They'll be restricted to Windows 11 as yet another way 12. to Yeah, or right, or some future, exactly. Just to kind of force people to upgrade to get the new stuff.
That would be exciting if you said, you know what, if you upgrade to Windows 12, you'll actually finally get good battery life.
Well, that's probably not how they would market it.
No,
but
probably not.
Yeah. But, yeah.
But if that were really the case,
right,
yeah.
Right. It depends. I have the latest generation Snapdragon is in the ThinkPad X13S, which I have in now. Mm-hmm. So supposedly the battery life is in the, you know, near 20 hours or whatever. I doubt it, sure. You know, but, you know, we'll see. I will say, I mean, compared to the previous gen, there is a noticeable performance improvement. Hmm. However, it's still an ARM chip and there's still the noticeable ARMness, you know, the ARM issues that you still have from time to time. But, you know, it's creeping. It's creeping upwards for sure.
Mm-hmm. I need you to tell me the right laptop to buy because I think my Surface Laptop 3 is on its last leg.
Oh, should she get that new one you just reviewed, Paul? The one that folds in half from Asus?
No.
That looks kind of hokey, right? Like, that looks like a weird hokey.
It looks kind of cool. A 17-inch.
Lenovo sells a ThinkPad that looks like that as
theirs
well.
Theirs is 13 inches. This one is 17 inches.
No.
Okay, wait a
But no, it folds in half, and you put the keyboard in the bottom half, and then it's just like a 13-inch.
Yeah.
They're not a 17-inch.
Okay. They're not the only ones who are doing that, by the way.
They just showed this at IFA. Thing around?
Yeah, it just was announced. Yeah. No, you don't want a folding screen laptop.
No.
It's $3,500. So
on a lap. I know. Yeah. Crazy.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I don't know. I guess the way I would say this is, generally speaking, 11th gen products are more reliable, get slightly better battery life than what I'm seeing with 12th gen so far.
Yeah,
but
okay.
The 12th gen are newer. And
well, I thought 12th gen was supposed to be better battery life.
Yes.
Maybe it'll learn. Maybe it has to learn you, like not to be all.
I'm not a hardware guy, and I know someone is going to come away with and say, Paul, you have no idea what you're talking about.
I get good results on this 15-inch Dell. Really good.
So do you... Okay, but...
And it's 12th gen.
12th gen what?
i5
HPU...
We talked about this. It's an H,
I know,
my
but
friend.
It's an H. Okay. All right, so that's the most part. All right, so...
It's a good one. It's not one of them crappy gold Pentiums.
Right. Here's my... This is just me not being a hardware guy, but this is my observation. Yeah. In previous generation chips, U series, which stood for Ultrabook, right, was basically what the chips that you saw in everything. It was in everything. Yep. It doesn't matter what. Very occasionally, you would see H series, but it was U was everywhere. And when you go forward to 12th gen, all of a sudden, there's this new SKU in the middle called P, which is 28 watts, which now is on most everything. It's on Ultrabooks. It's the one. Like I said, I had 12 in. I bet 10 of them are P series and 2 are U series. Like it's overwhelmingly P series. And the only thing I can think of is, well, first of all, you sacrifice a little bit in battery life for sure. But I wonder if this hybrid core thing has caused U series to not quite be as good, because I don't think the U series chips we're seeing this year are as good as the U series chips we saw last year with 11th gen. I just don't think they're as good.
Hmm. I'm very happy with
battery
this.
Life.
It's a 12500H.
Right.
And
do you have discrete graphics or integrated graphics?
Nope, integrated. You know, I got on your recommendation, I got kind of like what a normal person would
I
get.
I love the implicit
it's
I'm
you.
To blame that
it's your fault.
So okay.
No, I think you were right.
That is what that's what
system.
I would choose. And I this is a XPS 15, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I like this form factor a lot. You know, you don't have like the numpad stuff, which
No.
Right.
And you
stand.
could get obviously, Mary Jo, you don't need the 15. You can get the whatever the 13. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are nice.
I like
nice.
The XPSs. And I have to say,
I've never had one.
I don't want to go out on a limb and have you be mad at me, but I feel like this is 8 or 9 hour battery life easy on the 15.
What I would like, so it's, I wrote about this a little while ago too. It's weird to me. I just said, you know, most people don't use tablets and pens and stuff, but it is weird how often premium PCs in particular are like hybrid convertible PCs.
Yeah.
HP Spectre X360 is a good version or a good example. The anything with the name Yoga in it, like the X1 Carbon Yoga or X1, sorry, ThinkPad right. X1 Yoga. For myself, I actually prefer just a traditional laptop form factor.
Same.
The ThinkPad ThinkPad, I think, is switching, not this year for everything, but probably next year, to better keyboards, better form factor. I think there's going to be a big shift happening at with ThinkPad, which is very interesting.
I wish Mary Jo could try a framework, because it's 3.2. I really like the framework. They have 12th gen now.
Yeah, I don't know.
Keyboards, I think, are very good. Mm-hmm. But and the nice thing is, Mary Jo, it's upgradable. So
yeah.
Right.
They make motherboards. You know, I could upgrade my 11th gen mm-hmm. Intel now to a 12th gen, mm-hmm. and presumably, mm-hmm. I'd be very curious. I bet you they do an AMD.
Mm-hmm. You got to, Mary Jo, you got to, so what you should do is, first of all, you should visit here. We've been talking about this for a while anyway, but.
I know.
And yeah. While I have a million laptops in and look at them all, because it's hard to go and see these things, yeah. You know, in a store. Yeah.
That's the drawback in the framework. No, there's
no, you
nowhere
can't
to
go
can
to
see
any
it.
Store.
Yeah.
No, there's nowhere to go to like
no.
check out laptops.
No.
And you know, I won't get another Surface after this one, just because this isn't that old, right? This is 3 years old. Now my motherboard's flickering again and doing weird shut off things. And I'm just like, and this is the motherboard I replaced.
This is
right?
So
I'm
three,
like, it's
right?
not long this... for this world. Surface Laptop 3.
And
introduced
is it
in
Intel?
2019. Intel
or AMD? Okay.
Intel. Yeah.
I know the AMD that year was on, like, was previous gen and was kind of underpowered.
No, this was an Intel one. I'm just disappointed
I don't know.
In how this went.
I prefer HP keyboards personally.
Although
the
like
latest.
I like HP a lot. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know.
No, because we think there's going to be a we think there's going to be a Surface launch this fall, right? Like every mm-hmm. fall they have mm-hmm. a launch. But I'm just like, I'm just not. Waiting around, even if there's a laptop 5, like I'm very gun shy on them now.
I think there would have to be at whatever the Surface event is, that has to be part of it. A laptop 5, they're overdue.
I'm worried after what happened with the 3 about going with the Surface.
Yeah.
I hate to admit that, but
yeah. Well, if there was something perfect, I would recommend it to everybody. I don't know.
I know. No, and everybody has different needs. Like for me, the biggest needs are portability and battery. Those are my two things.
Yeah. I do like the spec. I will say I had a problem, like I said, with battery life on one computer. And when we flew to Mexico last time, I used the Spectre X360 the entire flight. And when the guy said, you got to put away the laptops, I looked and I was like 54% battery life. I'm like, that's pretty good. Like, that's pretty good.
Wow. That is good.
And and I was online and I was writing and I had the thing going the whole time. I thought that was pretty good. It's a convertible, which I don't care for personally, but I just use it like a laptop. I mean, it is a great laptop.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You gave me one when my Surface was in the shop the last time. Remember, you gave me an HP AMD.
And it was AMD, yeah. Yep.
I like it.
It was
like
probably an Envy. I think it was an Envy.
Yeah. I liked it. And I still use that. Like when I'm on the road and stuff, I use that.
I have 3 16-inch laptops, and now one's an HP Envy 16 I haven't written about yet. I really
so
like
big.
This form factor. 16's
it's gigantic.
Too big, yeah. I know, but I want to use it on a, you know what I mean? I like the screen size. It's good.
Yeah. For me, 13 is okay.
Yeah.
I can get by with it.
Yeah.
Notepad on the 3.32 screen on the framework would look so good.
Ideal. It would
look my
perfect,
God. Right? Emacs looks great. So imagine how good Notepad would look. And with that, I'm putting away the cheese balls.
Notepad is probably, it's like a single core application. It probably just pegs your CPU and
leaves it at that. That must be it.
It doesn't need to peg it. It's just sitting there waiting for Mary Jo to type.
Right.
It's an eternity between keystrokes from their point of view.
I think TweetDeck probably does a number on my battery for one
It
thing.
Might. The live scrolling might, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, that could well be it. I doubt Twitter optimizes it in any way.
Right, exactly.
Browsers are notoriously power hungry, really.
Yeah.
And what browser do you use?
Edge.
Oh, I think Edge is the new Bing.
Yeah, the new pig, yeah.
I think actually Edge was supposed to be very lightweight. I don't know if it still is.
Right.
So I launched Notepad and it didn't impact my CPU or RAM at all.
No, it's just sitting there most of the time. It shouldn't do anything.
Right?
No, I know. I know it shouldn't. I'm just. And then you type and it goes up 2%. Actually, you type and it goes up to 4%.
Ooh.
That's it.
That's interesting.
I wonder, you know what I could do for you? I could try on this. I could just set it up when I go home today. with TweetDeck in the background. Unplug it. TweetDeck in the background. Mm-hmm. Notepad open. I need to get some typing thing, and just let it run.
Just
and see
let it sit there, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I bet you, if just Notepad was running, I wouldn't need to type keystrokes. They're not going to use a whole lot of juice,
right?
I'll do that. I'll leave that. Now I don't know how I would know when it died, how long it went.
Yeah, right.
It'll just be
a
liquid pile of sludge in the corner.
Yeah. If I start the clock timer, if I start the stopwatch. Mm. And then when I reopen it after it dies, it might show the last time.
Maybe.
No,
yeah.
Oh.
I'll try that.
like when there's a nuclear accident and the clocks.
Yeah,
freeze.
Yeah. Everything died at 10 o'clock at night. Yeah, they're all the clocks in Chernobyl are at the same time. Yeah, that's it.
Right.
Yeah.
We shouldn't joke about nuclear accidents these days.
I was going to say it's going to be that way again soon if they're not careful.
Yeah, a little sensitive. Microsoft 365er.
Yeah, I couldn't think of anything.
Boy, Paul sounds so excited.
He sounds super excited.
So, all right, so I'll present you with a sentence and then my initial reaction, which is Microsoft Outlook is picking up Microsoft To-Do integration. And then my reaction to that is, doesn't it already have Microsoft To-Do integration? There is a tasks component in Outlook, and it must tie into Microsoft To-Do, but I guess they're replacing tasks with to do.
So,
is that right?
Remember, Microsoft had and still has like a million different ways to do your own to do lists. Like tasks is one, to do is one. They used to have Wunderlist. Like there's just so many different products. OneNote, right? Like you could use any of these things to be your task management type product. So, I would love them to go public and just sit down and explain this to everyone. But I know just from people talking to me about this, that this whole Meta OS thing that they're doing, the idea of this thing is to bring a common set of elements to Teams and to Outlook and to Edge, right? So what they're trying to do is take things like tasks, lists, files, whiteboard, planner, stream, and make all of these things available on all three of those hubs, Outlook, Edge, and Teams. So this is what they're trying to do. This is the Uber goal. They have never said this publicly that I know of, right? I think a lot of people would benefit from understanding what are you guys doing? Why are you bringing Outlook to, why are you bringing, you know, tasks to Outlook? Why are you bringing To-Do to Outlook? Why are you bringing Planner to Outlook? Like, what's going on here? I think they should just one day have Jared Spataro or someone stand on a stage and say, you know, it's probably been confusing to you all what we've been doing. This is what we're doing. And they don't even have to use Meta OS as a word, but if they just explained that and the idea that people use different things as their hub. Like, not everyone lives in Teams. Not everyone lives in Outlook, right? They're trying to just be versatile, I feel like, and give people options. I feel like Microsoft always gives too many options, but I feel like the Office team is trying to streamline those and make it more consistent across these hubs. That's what I think is happening.
Well, actually, you may be on to an implicit acknowledgement of strategy, which is that if any service appears on all three of those things, it is the way forward, right?
Yes,
so in some ways, you could be making the argument here that because To-Do explicitly is now being added to Outlook, it is the tasks functionality of the future.
It is. Yes. Right? Yeah.
I mean, seems that way.
That's my guess about what's happening.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. But then the biggest story of the day. I'm glad you
thank you.
Until now.
I don't know why this wasn't the top story, frankly.
It should have been.
What?
Really.
What?
I mean,
I'm excited.
Jensen Harris. Who cares about that guy? What about Kazila going away?
Who? Kazila?
Exactly. Thank
you. Is that
you.
From
That's
the movie Avatar?
Response.
It's,
no,
it
was in The Lion King.
Avatar. Nothing to do with Lion King or Vuvuzelas. None
it's
of those things.
It's the circle of life.
It's the Kazila of life.
Kazila.
So in 2018, Microsoft launched this service. It's a large group messaging service called Kazila in India. It started in India.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So it's not for the U.S.
It's kind of like, it was kind of like a WhatsApp competitor, like kind of designed like that. And somebody in the Office team saw this and said, you know, it'd be cool. We should just integrate this into Microsoft 365, right? Like give people this thing. If they want to use it, let them use it. So once they did that, I had so many people coming to me saying, so wait, am I supposed to use Kazila now or am I supposed to use Teams chat? Like what? I'm confused. Again, Microsoft giving too many options as they want to do. Then suddenly they are now killing Kazila. So, you know, killed by Google. We have killed by Microsoft also. Mm. And planning to retire Kazila as of August 31st, 2023. Until then, so you get a year from today. You can keep using it, but after that, that's it. Like, it's going away. And their explanation is, you know why we're getting rid of it? Because it overlaps with Teams. Yes, thank you. We knew that like 3 years ago, 4 years ago. But now right. It feels like somebody in the office team is like looking at things and going, why do we have this? Like, we have Teams, right? It also could be that they're killing this product because, as we've heard, Microsoft is doing a lot of belt tightening right now in the Windows and the Office team. So they may just be looking at things like, do a lot of people use this? Yes or no? No? Okay, let's get rid of it and get rid of the team and save some money. That could also be what's happening. Yeah. Right?
This shows how hard it is to create an
But yeah, they were very low-key about killing it off after kind of celebrating that they had brought it up through the Microsoft Grudge incubation team.
It was a garage
team,
thing, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shows
yeah.
how hard it is
it's
to...
Going away. So if you're a Kazila user, they want you to go to Teams instead.
Fair enough.
No big surprise, as somebody said to me, but still an acknowledgement that...
If you're an anything user, they want you to go to Teams instead, right?
Right.
No matter
right.
what you use, go to Teams. Go to Teams.
Yes, pretty much.
What were you going to say, Leo?
It's, it's a problem if you're a global company naming products.
It is, right. Yeah.
Because I think... the name is a stopper in the U.S. It's just in English. It's like
people are like, what?
Kazila.
They should have called it Kazam and brought in what's his name, Shaquille O'Neal.
But it was intended for India. There's no one. Yeah, India has more languages than almost any country in the world. Yeah. Maybe it does. Mm-hmm. So there's no one word. You know, you don't want to do a Hindi word because in the Marathi people won't use it. So what you do something that's mm-hmm. kind of nonsensey but sounds. Like it's Indian. I don't know.
Yeah.
Must
no, and then
so
you have to make sure no one else owns the trademark also. Right.
Right. And the website and all of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It must be very hard to be, I think, just to be a global corporation in general these days.
Yep. Yeah. You're always walking out of eggshells. You're going to insult someone somewhere with your Nova car.
Right.
Or whatever.
I mean, you know, if you're a big, you know, if you build nuclear plants, it doesn't really matter what your name is. You can be a global concern. That's easy. You could be international paper company and be international. But if you're software, it's very different.
Now look at the names of startups these days. Like I laugh so many times when I see startup names. I'm like, what?
Well, we're used to Google now, but that was a terrible name.
I know. People hated that, right?
Google?
iPad. People like flipped out.
Oh, I hated iPad. I did. We really mocked it. Yep. But I also knew at the time, you're going to get used to it.
Yep.
Because you get used to everything. Except Kazila. I'm never going to
Except Kazila.
Never going to get used
we
to
We hardly knew you.
Yeah, didn't get a chance.
You'll be right there ahead of Kin in the book of Microsoft killed projects.
Kin was a good name, though.
Mm-hmm. Kin was a good name. Kin probably worked well in a lot of languages, actually.
It was a good product. Got screwed by Verizon.
That's cute.
How long before Microsoft makes a product called Kin?
I know, because they love to reuse code names and names. They do.
Yeah.
Well, I think they...
Kazila might still be here if they'd called it Kin.
Right.
Or maybe something else will show up, Viva Kazila.
Viva,
you know,
Kazila.
Viva
Kazila.
I think the Viva Groove is more likely.
Kazila. Why not?
Okay. Let's talk about the cloud, shall we?
Okay. Why not?
Paul, can you feign interest of some kind? Just pretend.
No, this is a big deal because it's kind of surprising Microsoft hadn't had this already, but they didn't have ARM-based VMs in Azure until now.
Right.
It's, you know, AWS had Graviton for like years, and then Google just announced that they were going to have ARM-based VMs in the Google Cloud. But Microsoft hadn't said anything until this April when they announced the preview of ARM's ARM support in Azure VMs. And then this, as of tomorrow, September 1st, it'll be generally available. So the way they're doing this is kind of interesting. They partner with Ampere. It's a company that makes ARM-based server chips. And so Microsoft started working with them to do ARM-based VMs for Azure. What else do you need to note? All the a lot of Linux flavors are available.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. Because Ubuntu Canonical came out with an announcement. I thought it was a
Ubuntu-Microsoft
partnership.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's like every major Linux. See if we can find the list.
Ubuntu, Red Hat, Enterprise Linux, SUSE, CentOS, and Debian.
Nice.
Coming soon. Alma Linux and Rocky Linux.
I am positive those don't even exist.
No,
those are
hilarious names. Making those names up just to see if you understand.
Yep, exactly. To see if anyone's paying attention.
Is anyone going
to
type those words? Yes.
Yep. Alma, Alma Linux. We're all.
Also, if you're not a Linux fan, I know there may be some people who are not. This is Windows Weekly. You can run a preview of Windows 11 Professional and Enterprise on these ARM VMs as well.
Yep.
So, yeah. It was time. A lot of people have been saying, what is Microsoft going to do with ARM in the data center? They've got Windows Server running on ARM, but only for internal use, and they won't sell it to customers. So the way they're going at this is ARM VMs. Oh, we've got somebody in the Discord. Alma user here. Okay, it exists. It's not a made-up name. Thank you, Newman.
Newman. Newman.
Yeah. I think the one takeaway people should have is if you haven't been noticing, Microsoft is really going all out to show that they're doing stuff with ARM. After years of working on Windows on ARM and kind of letting it atrophy, they're back. And everything they're doing now is like bringing Visual Studio to ARM, a native version, you know, doing this Volterra desktop PC thing that they showed at Build based on ARM. Everything is ARM, ARM, ARM. And I think at Ignite, I'm expecting to hear a lot more stuff about Windows and ARM. You know, they had to. Apple did it. Now everybody's going to Microsoft saying, "So, hey, Apple's doing this. What are you guys doing?" And they need an answer.
Is there any word? Remember the speculation that Qualcomm had an exclusive on WOA?
Yep.
Is there any word about that?
We don't know. We don't know if that's true.
I would love to know about this.
But Windows and ARM is still not official.
Available as an ISO or supported on Apple. Right. Not officially supported.
And the thesis was, that's probably because Qualcomm had an exclusivity deal.
Though we don't know that.
But we don't know.
Yeah. We don't know that for sure. But it's one of those things that makes sense, so it must be true. And God knows that's never gotten anyone in trouble. So,
well, I'll tell you, the source of that rumor was Rich Woods, who has a lot of good stuff on Qualcomm.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel very...
But I think
feel,
even
I
if you
say
went
it's
back...
100%.
He also said it was expiring. That's why he knew about
it.
And it apparently did not, so...
Mm-hmm. Right. Or they extended it and didn't tell anybody because they certainly haven't been open about this partnership.
Oh, it's a secret.
Other
it's
than
probably collusion. It's probably an antitrust trigger.
They're so far
If only
behind
we could find someone who cared.
I don't know.
Like, you're cute. Just keep doing what you're doing. No one cares.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the plan originally was it was going to start with Qualcomm and move to other ARM chipsets, and that's never happened.
And some of those companies either went out of business or just stopped working on that project, right?
I will tell you what we need less than the current architecture is a different bunch of different versions of that chipset that don't work well with PCs, right?
So exactly.
I think what it's possible that I think the speculation was NVIDIA's acquisition of Nuvia, which is going to result in a new style of ARM chips or PCs, might be what is keeping them on Qualcomm.
Oh, interesting.
The bet is like this will work out well, hopefully.
Maybe. Yeah.
And there's no incentive for them to work with Apple Silicon. They don't really care about that.
Oh, no. Microsoft would love to do that. I don't think Apple cares.
Apple is the problem. They went to a lot of effort to do boot camp. And they had Apple-specific drivers for Windows. I mean, that was a significant effort back in the day.
Yeah. Yep. It was necessary back in the day. I mean, I feel like
Has the world
you
changed
see,
that much?
Yeah, I think it has.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I don't think that running a Windows app locally on a Mac is a huge deal anymore beyond special use cases like developers who obviously have special, those needs or like help desk personnel, that kind of thing. But – you know, general office workers where it's like, no, you have to run the this Windows app and it has to be on your computer. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Obviously it does. But I don't think it's a mainstream issue anymore. I don't think so. That's just, we can all speculate, I guess.
That's your thought.
You can.
Yeah, it's good to have a thought.
That's my thought. And I'm sticking with it. I don't care what you say. I'm not changing my mind. Yeah.
Let's move right along to the EU-based cloud licensing issues with the... What is it? Is it about data storage, where it's stored?
No, this is this is a very complicated matter.
Can I summarize this one really quick?
And then
you can completely
give it a whirl.
Because I know you're going to love this.
Yep.
3 years ago,
yes.
Three short years ago,
yes.
Microsoft changed the licensing for Windows and Office running on competing clouds and to make it more onerous and expensive. And partners and customers complained to the EU. The EU actually inquired with Microsoft to see what was going on. Microsoft came up publicly and said, "You're right. We're so sorry. This we didn't mean for this bad effect to happen.
Oh, I remember that.
We're going to fix
it. We're going to fix it. I remember that. Yeah.
And they moved really quickly, and they fixed it, and everything's fine now.
Okay.
Does that sound about right?
Right.
No.
It's not what happened, huh?
Tell me if you have any issues with this, that version
sentence.
Of the story.
Good up until right. that last sentence. Okay. So, yes, all of that happened. Microsoft changed the hosting rules to make it more expensive to run their software on competing clouds. So if you're a Microsoft right. fan, you're like, yeah, of course. They're trying to give themselves a leg up so that people mm-hmm. will run it on Azure, right? Why not? Right. All's fair in business and competition. Well, you know who didn't like it? AWS and Google. So they got their partners and customers to complain to the EU. And then the EU kind of said to Microsoft, hey, what's going on? Then Microsoft came out with the European Cloud Principles. Like, we're the good guys. We're so sorry, Paul said.
I love the name, too. European Cloud Principles.
So this week, they shared the set of things that they're going to be changing. And the things that they're changing are going to help Microsoft Cloud Solution Provider partners. So if you're a smaller hoster or an outsourcer, you love what Microsoft just did. You're like, yes, they just gave me right. all these new ways of licensing things with customers. It's going to be awesome. And if you're AWS and Google and Alibaba, you're like, wait a minute, nothing changed. We're excluded right. from all of these new concessions that they just made. We're called listed providers. And they said, this is all good for everyone except these listed providers. So, yeah, they helped customers who don't want to run Microsoft software on Google or on AWS or Alibaba. But if you do want to run it on that, they didn't change anything, and you're still going to be paying more to run them on competitive clouds.
But here's why this is genius on Microsoft's part. Because they know they're dealing with the EU, and they know right. how the EU works and how they think.
Yep.
So the first thing they did was they took 3 years to address this problem. They're operating on EU time. Brilliant.
Yep.
Really smart. It, 3 years went by. Like, seriously. It's incredible. But the other thing they did was, you know, I know this is a general, this is just a general statement. If there's an antitrust fan in the Discord, don't freak out at this. But in general, antitrust in the United States is focused on consumers, and antitrust in the EU is focused on competition.
Right.
Primarily with European competition, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think right. Google or the EU cares if Microsoft is being mean to Google or Amazon. Those are United, those are U.S. superpowers. All they care about are these EU small guys. So they're like, yeah, we'll fix it for that. We'll take 3 years yeah. to fix it, and then we'll fix it for your stupid little special use case that no one else cares about. And the EU is probably going to be like, awesome. Thank you.
Yep.
And that's probably going to be the end of it.
It'll take 3 more years, right? 3 more yeah. years will go by.
Yep. It's yeah. crazy. Like, it's yeah. crazy how they solved this problem.
Yeah. You know what? They're good. They know yeah. how to work this, right? I mean, yep. I'm not going to say there are no good things in here. If you're somebody who runs software in a hosted manner on other cloud infrastructures, you should mm-hmm. check out what they changed. They've got some new things they call flexible virtualization benefits. It's going to help you if you're a software assurance customer, unless you're running on AWS, Google, or Alibaba. And there's a new provision in here. If you're somebody who has been wanting to run Windows 10 or 11 in a hosted manner, they made a concession where you don't need a VDA add-on license anymore. So that could save you some money. There's a new way of Windows Server Virtual Core licensing. There's a whole bunch of things. So you should check it out. But just remember, if you're trying to think if you're thinking that this is going to help you run Microsoft software on AWS or Google or Alibaba, you are wrong. It will not help
you any money. The other thing I hope people noticed during your description of this is Mary Jo skimmed right over the top of the Microsoft licensing elephant and just mentioned the smallest little slice of this terrible monstrosity. And it already is horrible. And the notion that Microsoft improved licensing in Europe by making it more complicated, frankly, because this thing you thought couldn't be more complicated, it is, in fact, now more complicated. So,
I'm friends with the guys at Directions on Microsoft, who I do a podcast with them about, and we talk about licensing a lot, right? That's their specialty.
That's all they think about. That's their whole.
So I sent them the link to this, and you should have seen the answers that came back, like charts and like graphs, things crossed out, things encircled and being
nerds.
Like, make sure you mention this.
Nerds.
And I'm like, oh my God, there's no way I could like put all the things
how
you
are they
told
not
in
insane
story.
People, all of them? They should all be in a rubber room wearing
such
those.
A weird thing. We specialize in licensing. I guess it's a good business.
Oh man, people need help, right? People need help.
Just, I wouldn't want to do that to myself.
No, I know.
It's a lot.
It's awful.
Nerds.
Yeah. Nerds. Licensing nerds. The best kind of
the
nerds.
The worst, back to Ubuntu, I guess, if we must. What's going on?
I know. Yeah. What's going on here?
It's sneaking in
so
all
this
over.
This wasn't so good. There's a release of Ubuntu called Bionic Beaver. Who knew?
I knew. One of my
version
favorites.
Version 1804
It's old.
Ubuntu.
That's old.
Yeah. Oh, it's old. Okay.
Yeah, very old. Yeah.
So some people were running this in their VMs on Azure. They had an auto update setting set, so it automatically updated to this. And unfortunately, when it did, we found out, and Canonical found out, that there was a DNS issue in Bionic Beaver. And so it got propagated to VMs running that Ubuntu release in Azure. And it made a giant cascading outage happen for people who are using Ubuntu on Azure.
Nice.
Right. So a lot of services went down. Like Azure Kubernetes service went down. The container app service went down. This started 2 days ago, by the way. One day ago. Yesterday, August 30th, really early in the morning it started. And when I woke up this morning, still going on. Ubuntu had fixed it. Microsoft had tell people reboot your VMs. And it's been kind of a big mess. So I just checked the Azure page. It looks like they fixed it, but you might want to go to the Azure status page if you do this and look at the remediation suggestions and such.
You know, if I'm not mistaken, this new Ubuntu and whatever else Linux on ARM is going live tomorrow. So you might want to stay tuned to that page tomorrow.
Good point.
You know, see how that goes.
Yeah.
I think that happens tomorrow. I think it's September 1.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yep. And then the last thing, while we're talking about Azure Kubernetes Service, because of course we are, it's the cloud segment.
I like that you put AKS in there like anyone would know what that meant.
Like anyone would know. AKS, you know, Azure Kubernetes Service.
Yeah.
So every year for the past 10 years, you guys know I'm very persistent. This is one of the reasons I drive Microsoft crazy. I ask them the same question multiple years just to check in. So about 10 years ago, I started asking Microsoft when they were going to move Office 365 to Azure, because it doesn't run on Azure. Parts of it run on Azure, like Teams does. And they said their goal was to get all of Microsoft 365 and Office 365 to host on Azure. You know when we joke about hard computer science problem? This is a hard computer science problem, right? This is a very hard computer science problem. So what they're doing is they're using AKS to kind of lift and shift a lot of Microsoft 365, especially the Exchange part of it, over to Azure. When I asked them this week, how's it going, guys? Like, it's been 10 years. Like, how's it going? They're like, yeah, we're still not done. We're still a work in progress, but we're getting there. Like, AKS is really helping us a lot. And Microsoft even put out a case study that I linked to in an article I have if you want to read it about how they're using AKS to try to bring more of Microsoft 365 over to Azure.
Do they ever talk about what the rest of Microsoft 365 is running on? Is it Windows servers
don't.
In a data center? Or
They launched Office 365 before they had built Azure, or Azure was very new, right? And so what they had to do was build their own set of servers in their own data centers with their own cloud infrastructure that was not Azure to host this. And the name of what hosts this is Autopilot. So if you ever hear about Autopilot, there's two Autopilots. There's the Windows Autopilot, which is for provisioning and configuring systems. And then there's this other Autopilot, which Microsoft built to host its own back-end services before Azure was really a robust back-end infrastructure. Hmm. So, yeah, it's running. So there's a lot of Microsoft things like Bing and Microsoft 365, Office 365, some of Xbox also, that runs on these bare metal servers in Microsoft data centers and not on Azure.
Oh, at least it's not free BSD, I guess.
You know what? I would go for that. If I could get free BSD to run on something, I would do it. Even if it's the cloud.
Yeah. Hmm.
I got excited about this next story because I thought, oh, maybe finally that one Surface that runs on ARM that I really like, there'll be an Intel version so I can actually use it.
Well, actually, there is.
Surface. So the story is that Surface Pro and Surface Pro X brands may be consolidated.
Yeah. I don't remember the exact year this happened, but probably when... I'm just going to guess. I might be wrong about this, but probably the year that Microsoft came out with Surface Pro 7, they also came out with Surface Pro X or 10 or whatever, which was the ARM version. And it had a new design. It was thinner, obviously, fanless, smaller bezels.
I thought it was really cool looking. I liked it.
Little pencil holder.
Yeah, it was built into the keyboard sort of thing.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. But
I didn't want a WOA Surface.
Right. So actually, Surface Pro 8, which is now, I guess, a year and a half old, has this design, right? So they actually did switch this design for Intel. There's a second-gen version of the Surface Pro X as well, and then Surface Pro 8. And Surface Pro 8 has the same keyboard with the pen integrated, you know, into the keyboard where it charges while it's sitting there so you don't lose it, which is really nice.
Oh.
It does have that design. So they actually did kind of switch that design. So I got the theory here. I think this is just really about branding, right? So that with there'll be something they'll probably call Surface Pro, 9, I guess. And instead of using Intel and AMD SKUs like we have on Surface Laptop, there'll be Intel and ARM versions of it. And it will be the same body, the same branding, you know, that kind of thing. I guess so. I mean, it was confusing that they had two different products.
Yeah, I didn't really ever realize the 8 is the same, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a nice device, actually.
It looks cool. I'm glad I didn't know about it, or I might have bought it by accident.
I feel like this is their push to ARM, though, right? Another piece of this is like ARM is just Intel, right? Like, same thing.
Yeah, it's the mainstreaming of...
It is.
ARM, in a way, on Windows, I guess. But Surface Pro 8 is basically the same form factor, same type cover, like I said. In fact, I reviewed it when I was in Paris last year because I took pictures of it in front of the Arc de Triomphe because I was like, we're going to bring this out into the world. So it has like a bigger display, Thunderbolt 4, all that kind of stuff. So.
Nice. That's nice. All right, so this is less of a story than I thought it was.
Well, yeah, it's I call it a branding story.
Yeah,
it was a little confusing that they had two different Surface Pros.
Right. And Windows Central said, and I think this is a good way to look at it, it's a nod to ARM or a win for ARM if they do this, right?
Right.
Yeah.
ARM is now an equal partner, in effect.
Yeah. That's a little bit of a smokescreen. But that's the theory. That's the theory.
Cool. All right, let's do an Xbox thing, Mary Jo. I think Sirachi wants your attention, so I'll let he seems to be signaling something.
He is.
But Paul Thurrott is here with the latest news from Xbox.
Last week, Sony announced that they were raising the price of the PlayStation 5 in all major markets in the world except the United States. So, interesting. Basically, by what we'll call 50 euros or 50 pounds or maybe $50. Because this thing was already not expensive enough. So, naturally, reporters went to Microsoft and Nintendo and said, hey, are you guys going to do the same thing? And Microsoft said no. The interesting thing about the Xbox is there are two versions of the console, as you probably know, Series S and Series X. Series S is the smaller, cheaper, slightly less powerful version. They offer that at a starting price of $300. Well, I'm sorry, a price of $300, which is a really cheap way to get into kind of a next-gen console. It's a nice value. It was already a great value. I think this helps put that over the top. The Xbox Series X is got to be $499, $500, so it's a lot more expensive. And I think with the, I don't know where Sony's at, but the Sony's prices are higher, and now they're even more and higher still. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, things could change in the general, but as of now, Microsoft says we have no plans to change the price of our hardware due to inflation or increased procurement costs, et cetera, et cetera. So they'll think about it, but for now, they're sticking where they are. Let's see. So tomorrow is September 1st, and that means Microsoft is going to start announcing games with gold titles for the, well, they have for the month, and then eventually we'll also get some Game Pass titles. We got a little bit of news there as well. So games with gold, we're still splitting title. This is actually kind of interesting. We have 360 games. We have an OG Xbox game. This is going to be one of the, jeez Louise, it's going to be one of the last times that happens.
Sorry.
That kid, I'll tell you, either that or the tornado's coming closer. Yeah. Are we in tornado season still? Yeah, we are.
I don't know what's going on here.
I would look. So, just make sure you're going to be okay.
It's an Amber Alert.
Oh, I've turned those off ages ago.
Yeah.
I never go out. So, I can't help.
two of the games coming this month are, probably Xbox One titles. It's weird. Oftentimes, we don't differentiate between Xbox One and Series X and S, but I believe these are Xbox One titles. But the big news is, one of the games coming this month is Portal 2, which is an Xbox 360 title. It's absolute classic.
Yep.
Definitely want to get that. If you have not played this game, my God, this is your chance.
It's free.
To do so.
It's free.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent.
Get it.
So that's been one of the best games with gold titles in memory. I can't remember the last time I was actually excited about one of these things. So this is a good one. That's a good game. Microsoft has not announced the first selection of Xbox Game Pass titles for the first half of September yet. That should be coming any day now. However, they had kind of an out of sync extra announcement about Game Pass the other day, and they announced that several new Humble Game titles are coming to Game Pass across PC, console, and cloud soon. So we don't know when exactly that's going to happen. I don't recognize any of these games. So I guess I'm increasingly out of touch here. But Midnight Fight Express, Moon's Cars, Coral Island, Ghost Song, Infinite Guitars, Proteus, I feel like I'm just saying words, and Signalis are the names of these. I've never heard of any of them.
But. And Kaizala.
No. And Kaizala, exactly. I feel like I'm missing a story in here. So Microsoft is also now testing what they're calling a consolidated game library on Xbox, I should say. So this is like a way to see your full library across not just the games you bought and maybe you're getting through incentives like game... I'm losing my mind. Game, I already forgot the name of it. Games with Gold, thank you. But also Game Pass, EA Play, you know, that kind of thing. So they're basically, this is just something that's happening right now in the Insider program, but they're basically looking at how they can surface these games a little bit better. I don't really see a huge difference here, to be honest. But anyway, there are so many different ways you can access games now on Xbox, through Xbox, whether you're on a console or PC. I think they're just trying to make this make a little bit more sense. And I think the thing with Xbox Game Pass in particular is a lot like Microsoft 365, where you have a lot of stuff going on that you probably don't even know you have access to. And this is just kind of a neat way to surface that. So they're kind of promoting the stuff as if it were in your library because you're paying for the subscription and... You get the idea. I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago we talked about this white, horrible-looking Xbox Elite Series 2 controller that was rumored. It has popped up on Amazon Mexico. It has since been deleted. But now we have an official render of it, and it is just as ugly as I thought it was.
It's the Panda Bear controller.
It's not attractive. It's too bad. Also, I'll just point out again, not to be a jerk about it, but this is the old style Xbox wireless controller, so it doesn't have the share button in the middle. There is a button in the middle, but it's for switching between profiles. That's one of the unique features of the Elite controller. So they're going to have to figure out a way to fix that in my mind. But anyway, apparently this is going to come out before they do that. That's too bad. So whatever, I don't care about it. And if you're following video game news at all, you probably know that Sony recently announced that they were going to dramatically expand the number of games we're going to make available on PC. And I think the figure was 50% of its games, which previously were all mostly PlayStation exclusives, were going to pop up on PC. And they sort of said mobile, too. And it was like, well, how's that going to work? This past week, they announced a new PlayStation Studios mobile division. And they're going to start producing mobile games. I think this is the smartest thing in the world. I don't understand why Nintendo hasn't done this. I don't understand why Microsoft hasn't done this. I'm sure Microsoft will point to Xbox Game Pass and more specifically cloud gaming as their solution for mobile. But I really like the idea of individual downloads and purchases and native games on platforms and just making them available on mobile. So I don't know what Microsoft's doing, but Sony is going all in on expanding their portfolio beyond just the console, which I think, again, is super smart. So we'll see what comes of that. But this just seems like a good idea to me.
That's very nice. See, that was easy.
That wasn't bad.
And here's Zerachi once more. Good to see you back, Kat.
I like that cat gets agitated when I talk about Xbox.
He does. As soon as you say Xbox, he gets up and
he's
runs
like,
off.
She's
and
then like, what's he talking about?
He senses you're upset, Mary Jo. Says,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Why is mom upset?
Right.
Well, is that the whole guy driving her crazy again? get him. All right, real quick, take a break. Come back mm-hmm. of the book just around the corner, but I want to tell you about our sponsor, InfraScale, InfraScale. I don't have to tell you, I'm sure that the statistics for ransomware attacks are just alarming. Betanews.com says cyber criminals can penetrate 93% of company networks. That's like everybody's vulnerable, right? And it's not just big companies getting hit. 46% of small and medium businesses have been victims of ransomware attacks. Almost half. Not us so far. Knock on wood. And not you if you've got InfraScale cloud backup. We always say backup is the key, right? Because if bad guys encrypt everything, you still have a secure backup. And that's what InfraScale does. It provides the security you need to manage backups and, really importantly, secures them from hackers or adverse events. It's not really a backup if it can be modified, right? Or, you know, if disaster is affected. You can sleep easier at night knowing your company will never have to pay a ransom. You can back up and protect SaaS, everything. SaaS applications, endpoints, servers, VMs. Execute your disaster recovery on site or if there is a disaster in the cloud. Every company needs a secure endpoint data protection solution that's easy to install and manage, and that's InfraScale. InfraScale offers this by integrating with Hyper-V and VMware, and you can get, as a result, site-to-site failover with orchestration in the InfraScale cloud. So you can run anywhere. Keep hackers away. Immutability is the key, by the way, to all of this. That's at the core of how the product is designed. InfraScale data is encrypted even in storage, so no one can alter it. Immutable. With InfraScale backup and disaster recovery, you'll be ready for whatever comes your way, whether it's a server crash, human error, malicious activity, a natural disaster. According to Gartner, the average cost of downtime caused by local or site-wide incidents across all industry sectors is $5,600 per minute. Per minute! $330,000 an hour. What? Clients and partners alike, including MSPs and VARs. Yeah, MSPs, VARs, you should be interested in this too, because you can use it for your clients. Trust InfraScale backup and recovery solutions to help keep their businesses running. Eliminate downtime and data loss with the most cost-effective enterprise-grade data protection solutions. More than 65,000 companies now are protected by infrascale. And if disaster strikes, you're back to work. Remember that number? $330,000 an hour? Your applications, your data, your systems are recovered and available in record time. Really keeps the costs down. Their award-winning world-class support is there to help you, too, 24/7. And now they have SSD for fast backups and recovery at no extra charge. Whatever your data, whatever your environment, InfraScale provides continuity and resiliency for your business. Visit infrascale.com/twit. Sign up for a free demo. See how InfraScale protects your business today. Infrascale.com/twit. I-N-F-R-A. InfraScale. S-C-A-L-E.com/twit. The solution to ransomware. Infrascale. Thank you, Infrascale, for supporting Windows Weekly. And don't forget, you support us. It's very important. Part of the whole deal here is if you go to that address, then they know you saw it here. Infrascale.com/twit. Back of the book time. We kick things off with Paul Thurrott and his app of the week this week.
Yeah, I'm doing this in backwards order today. You'll see why in a moment. Last week, a gentleman on Twitter, Kevin Lloyd, recommended an app called Image Glass, which is a free lightweight image viewer for Windows. So I retweeted it. I went to the site. I clicked on the top link, which was the Microsoft Store. I saw that it was maybe $8 or $9, and I thought, yeah, I don't know. But in the back of my mind, I was like, this guy, I'm pretty sure he said this thing was free. And so I went back to the site, and sure enough, this thing is free. If you get it from anywhere but the Microsoft Store, it's free. So I'm not saying you shouldn't support the author of this application, but there is a free version available on the web, and it is fantastic. So some number of months ago, I recommended something called Irfanwin, which is an awkwardly named but famous Windows application.
Yeah, it's his name, Irfan.
Okay, so. Irfanwin, there you go. That's not a good name for an app. But anyway, it's okay. The reason you want to replace photos in Windows 10 or 11 for viewing photos and other pictures is that it's terrible.
It's awful.
And one of the ways it's terrible is you could have maybe you open an item on your desktop or in a folder. Sometimes it lets you navigate between all the other items in that folder, and sometimes it doesn't. And I have no idea why, but I really like this image glass, right? So it's super lightweight. You can get rid of all the toolbars and all that stuff. There's only one toolbar, but it has all the information about the file in the title bar, which I think is really smart. And it correctly navigates between photos in a folder, and it's really fast. It's a great app. So definitely check that one out.
And it's open source, and it's in the store, right?
It is in the store, but you can just download it from the web as well. Yeah.
Very good.
May I interrupt for a quick news flash?
News flash.
Arm sues Qualcomm and Nuvia for using licenses without approval. Ask Qualcomm to destroy designs developed under Nuvia agreements with Arm.
Whoa.
What? That's crazy.
Whoa. So that's how you handle the merger.
This is not good if you're a WOA fan.
So the one thing I will throw out there I don't know much about this stuff, but ARM they kind of make they're not even really reference designs, but they make they design chipsets that other companies like Qualcomm and Apple use as the basis for their own designs. I did notice in this past year that ARM Holding or whatever it's called came out with a chipset for PCs for I think the first time. And I thought that was kind of interesting, right? Because, you know, Qualcomm has for years now been working on their own PC chipsets, and we've been talking about Nuvia just as recently as today.
Yeah.
I wonder if ARM kind of went to them and said, yeah, you need to use our PC designs as the basis for what you're doing. And they were like, yeah, we're not doing that. I don't know. That's kind of interesting.
Right? Yeah, it's on Reuters right now, and it's going on Tech Meme right now.
That's okay. A big story. Thank you for the breaking news. Yeah.
Yep, it is. Yep, it is.
We will be covering that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. I'll write about that.
I think that probably holds up the NVIDIA Nuvia acquisition.
Yeah, I would guess that too.
Oh, boy. What a mess. Poor NVIDIA. I'm really starting to actually feel...
No, not NVIDIA.
Nuvia. Qualcomm.
Qualcomm bought Nuvia. I think they've already finalized it.
That's done.
No, they've done it. They own the company.
I get it. Both of them.
But what they're saying is you can't use this as the basis for new chipsets. Like,
ooh,
that's interesting. I'm curious what the rationale is there.
Because ARM, I mean, license, that's what ARM's business is licensing.
Right.
Right. Licensing chipset designs.
Yeah. Before Qualcomm bought Nuvia, Nuvia was an ARM licensee that was making their own designs.
ARM is seeking an injunction that require Qualcomm to destroy the designs developed under Nuvia's licenses. So ARM's saying, we licensed it to Nuvia. It cannot be transferred to Qualcomm.
That's ridiculous.
They want to sell them more licenses.
Exactly.
Right.
ARM's, so, okay. ARM said those licenses cannot be transferred to Qualcomm without our approval. We do not approve.
Wow.
Qualcomm, of course,
we want
paid
money.
$1.4 billion for Nuvia, probably thinking, oh, we're going to get those licenses.
Yep.
Yeah.
So maybe it's fixable, but it'll cost.
It may not be, you know, because, I mean, I'm sure Qualcomm's like one of their biggest customers, if not their biggest customer. So it may not be. It may just be, look, you guys can't just use
this is more
that.
Of a, we're going to put this public because you didn't do what we wanted privately.
Yeah.
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 So they'll settle. And,
okay. Yep. App pick of the week number two.
Yeah. So I was talking about doing some kind of, I had a rant last week, I think it was last week, about ads and trackers and stuff. And Leo recommended NextDNS. I've been using it ever since, and I love it, and I want to recommend it to others.
Good.
There's a couple ways you can use this thing. You can use it as a whole house solution if you configure your router to use NextDNS.
Yeah, everything goes through it. Yeah.
Apparently, there are issues with Google Wi-Fi, which is what I'm using right now, so I've just been testing it
surprise.
On individual...
what a shock.
Individual device. I know. Yeah, no, it's been
easy, though, to put it on individual systems, not just computers, but phones and tablets, too.
Yeah, and so what I found is, honestly, for my purposes, I really just want it on mobile devices because that's where all the mobile crap is so terrible. On Windows, you know, I don't really need it for, like, applications. You know, I'm not worried about what Adobe is doing or, you know, I use Microsoft Office or whatever. I don't use a lot of mobile apps, and I'm not confronted by unnecessary ads on Windows, except in web browsers, which is kind of the tip of the week bit of this. So I'll just say NextDNS, you can test it for free. So there's no harm, no foul just trying it. If you want to protect all your devices with unlimited bandwidth, I think it's $20 a year. It's nothing. So it's been a game changer. It's really nice. However, if you're just concerned with PCs, I mean, and this is the tip of the week, I guess I usually do this first, but we've talked about this a little bit before, but you could use NextDS, of course. That would solve the problem. But really, mostly what you're concerned about on a PC is your browser. So for starters, get a real web browser, not that Chrome thing you're using right now or Edge or whatever that don't do anything to prevent blockers or, or trackers, rather. Meaning get something like DuckDuckGo or Brave, which is what I'm using. Or if you have to use Chrome or Edge or Firefox even, get the right extensions that do those that blocking as well. It's just, this is the minimum, you know, it hurts my brain to think that most people in the world probably just sign into Chrome and use it and don't do anything to prevent it from tracking you across the internet. And then you'll go to work and complain about how you search for a pair of shoes. And now all you see are ads for those shoes and you have no idea how that happens. That's how that happens. So, you know, and that happens in Edge too. Sorry. I know they made a big deal of the three big buttons for tracking protection. It could be lax or normal or strict or whatever they call it. It's like, isn't that exciting? It doesn't stop anything, guys. It doesn't stop anything. Microsoft has just as much of a incentive to allow you to be tracked for ad purposes as Google does. In fact, in some ways they probably have more because they haven't made a good business of this yet, but they're working on it. So anyway, protect yourself at the very least, protect yourself.
This would be the time to point out that not only is it Google and Microsoft, but Apple also does ads.
Yep. Oh yeah.
I mean, honestly, all the big tech companies, Amazon too, are ad companies. There's a lot of money to be made.
They're all just as terrible as each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you have specific advice here. I use AdBlock Plus on Chrome. I use disable HTML5 autoplay, and I use something called uBlock Origin, which is the big
uBlock Origin is the best. Track. Chrome is rapidly phasing out all blocking because Google.
Yep, because that's their business model. Mm-hmm. They make 80-something% of their revenues with ads. Yeah. I mean, what do you think they're going to do?
Right.
So
that's why I like Firefox. Firefox uBlock Origin. Pretty close to heaven. An XDNS, you You should.
Yep, you got the.
Shouldn't see anything.
The holy trinity of blocking right there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like people will sometimes complain, oh, I can't use YouTube with all the ads. And I say, why? What? I don't see
ads.
Any.
What ads? What ads? What are you talking about? There are no ads on YouTube. I actually do pay for YouTube to not have ads, by
yeah,
the way.
But it's worth it,
comes,
by the way.
Yeah. It comes as part. I watch YouTube every single day, yeah. Like literally. Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, don't think I'm not a cheapskate. I mean, I should say.
I pay for a lot of content. We all.
People, you have no idea how much I pay for
All of us
content.
Are spending more on yeah. content than ever before. Yeah. For content yeah. companies to complain.
Right. I'll just refer you to my rant from last week. I have a big problem with services that I pay for showing me ads. And especially yeah. ads that are just intrusive, autoplay, video things that you can't stop or pause in any way. Like I'm done with that. That's mm-hmm. just unacceptable. Also, yes, my website has ads, but yeah. I also offer
so
a
do we.
To pay to not to see them. So
yeah. and so do we.
Premium program. Yep.
We came up with that as being the kind of nice compromise. I want to yep. make it always to be free. But we have to pay for it. So there yep. you'll get ads. And I think we charge $7 a month right. for all of our shows, plus a lot of other content. And yep. I feel like that's not a lot. That's not a lot.
It's not bad.
Hands-on Windows, for instance. Mm-hmm. Paul's great show.
That guy.
That guy. So you get a lot for $7, and I feel like that's a good compromise. And
I think so.
We haven't yet done the math to know whether that makes up for what we lose. I think it.
It's something that will change over time too. You have to kind of keep looking at it. But I'll just
We're
say
happy
too,
with
you know,
it at this point, I
there
think.
Are things we could do as an organization to make it hard on ad blockers, right? Like we could literally, you know, so you'll see sites that will do that. It looks like you're using an ad blocker. Sorry, you can't come in here. Like we don't do that. Like we sort of
thank you.
We hope people will do the right thing, you know. I'm literally teaching you how not to do the right thing, but I'm also saying, you know, in my particular case, like in with Twit as well, you know, there's a premium option. A
I think that's
option.
Fair.
Yeah.
I use ad blockers because it also blocks malware.
Yes.
It eliminates this incredible drain on your bandwidth and yeah. your battery.
That's right. It actually improves the performance and reliability of the systems you're yeah. using. We have to figure that we collectively as a content world or whatever need to figure out something better than web ads.
Paywalls right? is what it's going to end up being.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either that or, and in our podcasting world where it's going is the Spotify model, which is it's exclusive. Right. You have to use a special player mm-hmm. and you either get ads or you pay. But either way, we track you 100% of the time. Sure. And so, you know, Spotify, if you listen on Spotify, they know everything about everything.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's where we're headed, unfortunately. It's as bad for podcasts as it was for blogging. I mean, blogging became a very difficult thing to pursue as an independent. God bless you for doing it, Paul.
It's not possible, I think, to make a living just with ads on a website. It's
not anymore, not.
No. No, not without really making it miserable on everybody.
That day will come for podcasting, too, which makes me sad.
Yeah, which is too bad. Yep. Yep. Yep.
It's time for Mary Jo Foley to cheer us up with her enterprise pick of the week.
So the same way Paul got somebody submitting something to him on Twitter, the image glass pick, I had someone submit something on Twitter yesterday called SelfX, S-E-L-F-X. I had never heard of this tool. It came from a Microsoft MVP named Damian Van Robays. He posted the link on my site, on my Twitter stream, and I clicked on it and I'm like, oh, this looks interesting. It's a tool that's meant to help IT pros reduce the number of tickets and calls they get from their clients and their users. It's a web-based tool that this guy developed himself, I believe. It's very modifiable. He shows how you can modify it, add your own issues to the thing, and have it show a display to your users. And I'm like, oh, that looks kind of interesting. Well, it must be very interesting because on my Twitter stream, hundreds of people are chiming in and saying, this is amazing. I want this. Can I have this? And he said, yep, it's free. You can use it. Go ahead. So if you want to see if it might be something that would be right for you, go to his site, SYST and deploy. So systanddeploy.com. And You
it's going to put me out of business. The tech guy show is over. Everybody's going to download this, and it's done.
It's pretty. It looks pretty interesting, right?
Yeah.
He uses PowerShell. He says, "Here's how it works." He explains to you how it uses XAML and how the GUI displays, and how you can add in your own issues for your customers and change colors, change languages. It looks very, very modifiable. So, kudos to Damien for posting that. And if you want to check it out, systemdeploy.com for SelfX.
Excellent. Very nice. That's the enterprise pick. What about a code name?
So I wouldn't call this really strictly a code name. I don't even know if it's a final name or what I would categorize this as, but I've talked about it before on Windows Weekly, CBL Mariner. CBL Mariner is Microsoft's own Linux distribution that they built themselves. CBL is Common Base Linux. They only use this internally, and I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. They use it for, again, I'm going to talk about Azure Kubernetes Service. I think I talked about it three times on the show. In Azure Stack, they use it in Azure Percept, which is an AI tool that they have. They use it in the Windows subsystem for Linux and their PlayFab tool for the gaming community. Well, today they posted that they're using it in another place. It's very interesting. They've got a team inside of Microsoft called the Creator Platform and Experiences Group, CPE. So the CPE is the team inside Microsoft that does the Xbox storefronts for PCs, for consoles, and for mobile. And they posted something on the tech community site today saying, we're using this cool distribution Microsoft built, CBL Mariner. We're moving everything to it. And they said, listen to this quote. Like, this tells you how important this distribution's getting. Gaming security is driving all Microsoft gaming services to migrate to Mariner as the gold standard Linux OS with the goal of 100% adoption before the end of this calendar year. Like, Microsoft is all in on this, and it makes you kind of wonder, what are they going to do with CBL Mariner? Is it just going to stay internal, or will it become something else?
Just the name CBL kind of implies that it's not intended to be a full Linux.
Full, like, commercial Linux distribution, right? And it's on GitHub. Like, it's not positioned as, hey, we want customers to use this. But the fact that more and more teams in Microsoft are moving to it is very interesting.
There's a lot to be said for starting with a minimalist install of something, and then you add what you want, nothing more. Mm-hmm. A lot of Linux users do that with Arch.
Yep.
CBL Mariner.
CBL Mariner.
Now, this beer company is absolutely properly named.
It is.
This is an abomination. Mary Jo Foley, our beer of the week.
So after picking a very hard to pronounce beer last week, the Portuguese named Japanese beer, we're going for an easier choice.
Anyone can say this, yes.
Abomination Brewing, they are in North Haven, Connecticut. They make a lot of excellent beers.
Yep.
Excellent beers.
Yep.
So, you know, it's about to be Labor Day weekend here in the United States. It's the end of summer. Tomorrow is September 1st.
Oh, yeah.
So this beer is perfect for it. It's called Drippy Popsicle.
Last chance to drink an orange beer, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a beer. It's a sour. It's flavored with orange and vanilla beans. On the can, they recommend that people freeze the can for an hour.
Good idea.
So
make it slushy.
Even more like a popsicle when it comes out.
All right, I want it. That's a good idea. Yeah.
And it's categorized as a pastry sour. So pastry beers mean you put like pastry ingredients in, like chocolate or vanilla or any kind of thing, graham crackers, all kinds of crazy stuff, marshmallows. And it comes out like a smoothie. Some people call that a milkshake style or a smoothie. It's you know, if you like a popsicle, a drippy popsicle on a hot summer day, you're going to like this beer.
I'm going to freeze it. This can be, Paul, if you had two slushy machines, you'd have one for rosé and one for orange popsicle, drippy popsicle. all right. 5.5 ABV. You could drink it all day.
You could. Yeah, you could.
Yep.
I like
sours. Yeah, yeah, I like sours. All right, Paul and Mary Jo, they've done it again. Another fabulous edition, rant-filled of Windows Weekly.
Who's going to upset me next week?
You know what? I'm hoping now that we're going to get some more news fall starting. We'll have fewer rants and more news, but you never know. Rants are fun.
There you go.
I'm enjoying it. You can see the bright red color. It's all about getting the bull angry.
Windows Rant Weekly.
Mary Jo Foley writes about Microsoft at ZDNet, the beautiful new lime green ZDNet. Mm-hmm. You can find her stuff at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott, his blog is thurrott.com, thurrodoublegood.com. Mm-hmm. His books, including The Field Guide to Windows 10 at leanpub.com. And they join together at the HIP every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC for Winders Weekly. If you are a winner or a dozer, you can join us live by watching the stream or listening to it at live.twit.tv. If you're watching live, chat live at irc.twit.tv. Club members also can chat in the Club Twit Discord, which is a nice place, a good hang, as they say. One of my favorite hangs. We have lots of stuff going on in the Discord. We're going to have a kind of a fireside chat with some of our members coming up. We have a number of shows that are in the Discord, also put out on the Twit Plus feed for club members only. Because they're new, they don't have an audience yet, or they don't have advertisers yet, so the club pays for it, in effect. That includes Paul's Hands-On Windows, Micah Sargent's Hands-On Mac, the Untitled Linux Show with Jonathan Bennett. but it is a great benefit. Giz Fizz with Dick D. Bartolo, Stacy's Book Club. We're trying to decide on our next volume. Had a lot of fun with Clara and the Sun. All of that, plus ad-free versions of every show. And it's, all, as I said, only $7 a month at twit.tv/clubtwit. You could get, if you just wanted to hear Hands-On Windows, you could buy that for $2.99 a month. Same for Hands-On Mac. So that's another option for you. But all of that is at twit.tv/clubtwit. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show available, ad-supported, at twit.tv/ww. There is also a YouTube channel devoted to Windows Weekly. And, of course, you can subscribe in your favorite podcast client and get it automatically the minute it's available. And if your podcast client allows for reviews, please, would you leave us a 5-star review and tell the world how wonderful this show is? Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.
Bye-bye. Oh, one more thing about Jensen Harris.
Oh, good Lord, no.
We're going to get him on the show next week, Paul. That
yeah, exactly.
The thing is, he's a good guy. That's the hard thing. Like, I like Jensen. I haven't spoken with him in a while, but I don't know.
And you never will again, so it's all good.
I want to see a Twitter war between the two of you. I think that'd
be okay.
That'd be so exciting.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, a bunch of game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. But you already knew all that. What you may not know is that TwitNow is a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.